Welcome to Travel Stories on the Mileonomics Podcast Network. This week, we go back to cruising. The last episode we did on cruising, it was episode 4 in December of 2022. While that's not long ago, the reality is the landscape has changed. Wouldn't you agree, Tom?
It's changed a lot. Surprisingly, it's only been about 4 months since we did our last episode about cruising, and already a number of key things have changed.
So, thankfully, it's never all bad, but let's walk through the maybe it's not all bad and talk about the kind of bright sides of these changes first.
Well, I struggled with this one. I created the positive changes of 2023, and I sat there for a while. I couldn't really figure out very much. I would say my biggest opinion is there's still some richness, right? There's still cheddar, you know? There's still value in cruising, especially compared to all the other forms of travel and entertainment and vacations that people have out there. The cost of the hotels, the cost of the planes have been ever increasing. And unfortunately, cruising has also inflated some, but there are actually still some, I think, some sweet spots. There are certain regions of the world where there's cruising where I've seen a lot of values. Pacific Coastal, so you have a lot of these like cruising out of the West Coast, whether it be Los Angeles, San Francisco. Those seem to be strangely very inexpensive. I've seen a lot of good deals out of LA. So I think our West Coast listeners are, if they're not cruising, they're missing out. Alaska still seems to be pretty reasonable. I think there's a lot of capacity up there in Alaska. And I think there's very reasonable cruise fare in Alaska. Singapore, strangely enough, is another place where there's all these like 3-night, 4-night cruises. They don't go particularly very many places, but if you wanted to see, you know, Phuket or Penang, those are some cruise itineraries that seem to be very reasonable, like $200 a person, basically, before taxes and port fees. Very, very inexpensive.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you have this market that cruise lines were working before the pandemic, right? And we're seeing how they're redeploying their ships that in many cases were geared for the Asian market, right? The Chinese market. And they're sort of trying to adapt and see, okay, where do I want this ship that, you know, had been in Asia? We see the Voyager of the Seas, which was last year in the Nordics. I think that's out of Galveston now. They're sort of, you know, rejiggering to see what ships kind of work with different markets. And it's not just those three. I would also offer that Australia is another one where Carnival has sent, I think, one or two ships, and they just are trying to give away cabins to those members of to the VVIFP members.
I completely agree with you. Australia is another market where there are definitely some deals to be had. And part of it, I think, is it's so hard to get to, right? Like in order to get on a cruise, at least for us North Americans, we do have to hop on a plane for a fairly long period of time.
And it's not just hopping on a plane. The capacity until very recently with some of the recent announcements, I think Air Canada is adding, upgauging the Vancouver to Brisbane flight from a 787 to a 777-300ER. And I think they're going 2 a day. I could be wrong. I think it's 2 a day to Sydney in the December, January timeframe for prime time to get to Australia. But with that, you've got I think there's a new Auckland to LA flight and a couple of other new capacity increases, you're still not seeing award space. You're still not seeing those prices come down. I saw an article that said, oh, hey, they're really coming down 40%. They went from 10,000 to 6,000 for a business class fare. That's still not in the art of the possible for a lot of people.
Yes. I think United just announced they went gangbusters with their new United routes to Down Under. Because I think they started a whole bunch of like SFO, Melbourne, LA, Brisbane. They just went crazy. I think they announced what, like 3 or 4 new routes?
They did, or some of them were going to every day versus, you know, had been like 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. The key there though is I don't think they released any space yet. I think it's a question of when they become bookable and then when they actually start releasing space. That might be where we start to see a change in this dynamic. But right now, it just feels so impossible to get to the South Pacific.
Yeah, it's hard. I would say just going back to our original thought about what's good right now with cruising, I would say there's still a lot of options and deals and opportunities. I will say right now for me in cruising, I went a little crazy last year, as I might have mentioned in our last episode. I have more cruise opportunities than I have vacation time at this point, which is, I guess, a good problem to have. So that's going to be part of the good. I mean, there's just been so many interesting options for people. The Virgin Voyages with, you know, booking those with Virgin points, that's happened a couple times in the last few months. All these fun matches, you know, whether it be from Carnival or Holland or even Royal Caribbean. Of course, the UR Comp, the online casino host, that's still out there as an option to kind of leverage once you get one of these casino offers. And then a lot of the land casinos, I mean, there's still all these. I know Frequent Miler has covered this in extreme, excruciating detail, which they do wonderfully. So I'm never going to even try to attempt to do it as well as they do it. But there's so many of those casino match options out there with land casinos, whether they be in Philly or Atlantic City or San Diego or Florida, where, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities to get a free cruise from a casino on land. And I mean, I will say a lot of these opportunities do kind of, I guess, veer toward those of us that are gambling inclined or inclined to lose a little money at the tables.
Well, and I think that's the thing, right? Cruise prices, just like everything else, look high on the surface of it. But if you can figure out a way to bypass that barrier to entry and get, even if it's an interior cabin at the start or one of these matches, you can kind of build off that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we talk about the Wonder of the Seas that we did a month ago. But really, it's that get your foot in the door and then be prepared to continue onward. But let's move to the bad, because there is some bad to talk about here.
I was re-listening to episode 4, and I was listening to a section of the previous podcast where I was talking about, oh, it's great. They have twice daily housekeeping. They have wonderful multi-course meals and like all the good things, right, that I loved about cruising. And of course, I feel like they listened to that part of the podcast and decided, cut, cut, cut. Because wouldn't you know it, you know, Royal Caribbean in particular, and I think we experienced this on our last cruise a month ago, they have already removed twice daily housekeeping. Now we're down to once daily, which is, we put it in the bad section because it doesn't hurt that much. I mean, it was kind of a luxury to have your room clean twice a day. It really wasn't necessary, but you kind of only miss it when you're running out of towels. You don't want a beach day.
Yeah, but it was one of those things that sort of made it just a little bit more comfortable. It's a small room, and if every time you go back to your room, it's made up, it feels a little bit bigger. It feels a little bit more luxurious.
Yes. You're being pampered. Another way that you were going to be pampered was, you know, they had on many of the 7-night cruises, you know, they have a lobster night. And I think the one that we had, I mean, I know that I partake in more than one lobster tail. They're pretty tiny, you know, so I was like, I didn't mind asking for a second or a third. That is apparently a thing of the past. So pretty much all the cruise lines now have moved toward, if you want that second portion of lobster on lobster night, there's going to be an upcharge. You're not going to get that complimentary anymore.
Yeah, and I know that was a big deal for a lot of people. I mean, you want to do that surf and turf, and the surf part just isn't terribly substantial if you don't pair it with another entree.
Staying on the dining theme, you know, the other thing that I really have noticed is with inflation and I guess with higher food costs, for sure, I think the specialty dining costs have been going up. They've been rising gradually pretty much every year. I think even outside of kind of the most recent inflation we've had, because I feel like when I first started cruising, the upcharges for dinner might be like $10, $20, $30, were things that were like, that was more what I was expecting. Now, you know, I think when we looked at some of the prices on our Wonder Cruise, it was going to be $40, $50 a person for some of these supplemental charges to access some of the specialty dining. And I'm not going to say it's not worth it, but at those prices, it starts getting very expensive when you've got six people, a party of six, right, which was our group, for some of these specialty dining options on the ship.
And the thing that throws me off on that, right? So not as much specialty dining experience as you have, but when you're paying $50 more over and above what you're getting from that base level, you expect it to be substantially better. And there are some things where if you're doing, we did Chops on Wonder of the Seas, and that was fantastic. But still, there are some things that it's like, how are you going to do so many magnitudes better on a consistent basis at that price point?
Yeah. It's hard. And it's even more challenging because they're doing it at sea, right? You know, they can't even do all the things that a land-based restaurant can do. Although I guess they got the benefit of, I guess, a little bit better cost basis for labor and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. But there's still a lot of that challenge in delivering that much better quality. Now, we also had the ugly, and it's a little bit ironic the way that we sort of talked about the good, and the ugly sort of offsets it, right? Where we've got prices where if you can't get past that barrier to first entry on a ship, they're high.
Yep. I don't think I've seen them this high, quite honestly, at least as far, I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit alarmist or maybe I'm exaggerating, but what I've seen when I've been doing my shopping and I look at deals and things like that, except for some of those sweet spots we just talked about a moment ago, you know, your kind of core 7-night Caribbean cruise, those have been incredibly expensive. Like usually I'm expecting to see a lot of like interior cabins for like $500, $600, $700, you know, something in that range, you know, where, you know, before taxes and port fees and things and gratuities, $100 a day seemed like a pretty routine price. I think you're going to have a hard time finding that this summer. It's part of it. Again, it's the revenge travel. It's the Caribbean in the summer is a little different than wave season, right? You know, in wave season, you've got all these ships that are in Alaska, all these ships that are in Europe. They move back across the Atlantic or the Pacific. They come back to the Caribbean, okay? So during that wintertime, there's so much more capacity. But I'm looking at the summertime and all the people, all the families, all the kids that are, you know, out of school, people are looking at vacation options and they have been booking cruises because I think that the inventory that's out there for people to book this summer is very, very, very heavy. I think there are probably ships out there that are like 70%, 80% booked and it's 3 months out, 4 months out. And that to me seems a little unusual, especially because there's a lot of options. I mean, it's not like there is only one or two ships that are sailing the Caribbean. There are the Port of Miami. There's like 20 ships leaving the same day in a weekend. I mean, that's ridiculous how many ships there are. And yet they're quite full.
Yeah. Even the ships that are doing the 3 or 4 day to perfect day at Coco Cay. I mean, those are where you see probably a little closer to that $100 a day, but the ones that are going to be during the middle of the week when you're burning all your vacation time, which is where people aren't always excited to do a shorter cruise, are those ones that we still end up seeing in the middle of the week are going to be a little bit less, but not appreciably in the big scheme of things, right?
And those are the ones that seem to come up with the comp offers, you know, like the ones from the casinos. Those
exactly.
Those 3-night and 4-night cruises are seeming to populate at least the offers that I've been getting. And I'm not the biggest high roller, so they're not giving me always the best things. Where in the past, I think I felt like those were in there, but they weren't the majority, you know, and now they really are the majority of the cruises that are being offered for free.
Yeah. So I think recently they've moved Allure of the Seas. And I think I mentioned, I thought I saw Voyager of the Seas out of Galveston. And you're seeing a little bit more opportunity there. But you're limited on where you're going at Galveston, for example. So it's, are there opportunities somewhere? Yeah, most likely. Are they things you want to do? Are they things that you can get to? Is really, I think, kind of where it goes. Was there one additional change that you had identified on the casino offers, by the way?
There was, and I've definitely put this on the ugly list because this was almost something that caused a bit of furor. You know, I do frequent some of these Facebook groups, you know, with some of these casino elite type customers of Royal Caribbean. And Royal Caribbean did a very interesting thing. In fact, just recently, just in the last week or so, they've started releasing offers, complimentary offers for cruises, which up till now have almost exclusively been, and I would say exclusively, because I don't even think there has ever been that I saw a casino offer where they're not offering it as double occupancy. So just for those of you who don't know, usually when people get free cruise offers, it's usually for a couple. So if you had one person in the cabin, that's fine. It wouldn't cost any extra. But if you could also have two people in the cabin, it would cost the same amount, except you have to pay for that person's taxes and gratuities. But this most recent round of offers from the marketing department at the Royal Caribbean's casino program, you know, Casino Royale, they've included offers that only cover the first guest. So they're expecting you to pay for that second guest at the normal price. Or if you're a solo traveler, you're having to pay the solo supplement, which is, again, something that had been kind of built in to the casino offers in the past. And so this is a big deal. This is substantially, like, these offers are literally, you know, 50% less valuable than they were just recently.
That's incredible. I mean, that alone really, really changes the game. I have not observed whether my offers have been of that, but that would really, really impact the comp game, so to speak.
I think this is kind of reactionary because, once again, I mean, Royal Caribbean has been, quite honestly, a little bit too generous, I think, in their casino program, to be completely honest, just to call a spade a spade. And I think, unfortunately, the pendulum, because it's swaying in that direction, and now we're in this kind of interesting period where they don't have a ton of excess capacity to offer up to their casino members. You know, they don't have a ton of extra cabins that they weren't going to sell. They have tons of empty cabins that they're going to sell, you know, for cash money. So suddenly they're really being a lot more selective about who they're providing these free cruises to. Before, they saw it as distressed inventory, and they were like, okay, we'll just give it to these guys. You know, they like to cruise, they like to gamble, we'll still make some money in the end, and they probably do. But I think they're finding that, you know, hey, their profit margins could be a lot better instead of giving away the product. I mean, it's almost a mirror for what we're seeing in the airline industry and with the inventory of award flights, right? It's the same dynamic where you just see this resurgence, you see limited inventory out there, you see people who are willing to pay the price, the market price, which is quite inflated at this point. And the people that they were using to kind of offload their distressed inventory, those customers are kind of left out. And it'll be interesting to see how this pendulum shifts. I think this one person, one guest free casino offer, I think that's probably the pendulum swinging too much the other direction. Because suddenly you're going to make it so that people look elsewhere. You know, they're going to be like, ah, party's over. This isn't fun anymore. I'm going to leave for Carnival, or I'm going to leave for another company that maybe they're a little bit more generous. And, you know, long term, this could be a bad thing for Royal Caribbean, for them and their bottom line.
I don't often want to wish bad on someone or even a company, but this change is really a pretty substantial change if they roll it out widespread. They're probably testing it just like they test on other things. And hopefully that pendulum doesn't swing fully in that direction. But it is definitely, I would think it would be substantially less rewarding for a lot of the people that are enjoying cruising at the moment.
Yeah, I really am wondering. I hope that they don't move forward and roll it out more widely. Or at least if they are going to roll it out, maybe I can understand maybe for the summer. But when the fall comes around and we're starting to, and that's not too far away, by the way, because if you notice, you know, these sometimes are leading indicators, right? Because, you know, people are booking out cruises 2 or 3 months out, typically, even the more last minute casino comp cruises, you know, typically the dates are, you know, a month away or 2 months away or something like that. So I'm already getting offers that are in like September. So, you know, when you start talking about October, November, December, January, you're starting to talk about, you know, in that wave season, once again, where all those ships that were in Alaska, all those ships that were in Europe, they're back in the Caribbean again. And suddenly they should have some more distressed inventory, or inventory they're not going to really sell at the highest price. So they should be more generous and offer it to some of the cruisers that like to gamble.
Well, we can only hope and report back as we get a little bit closer to the end of the year. So we've talked kind of the broad brush observations of cruising. You know, obviously, a little bit more focused on Royal Caribbean, which we've had a lot more experience with in the more recent days and weeks. Why don't you set the stage for a little bit of a trip report? We did, both of our families did, Wonder of the Seas in March. Set the stage, TK.
Sure. Well, you know, this was both of our first trips on Wonder of the Seas. She is the newest ship in the Royal Caribbean fleet, and she happens to be the largest ship in the Royal Caribbean fleet, and actually the largest ship in the world. She is a Oasis class ship. These are ships that have pretty much all the bells and whistles. I mean, when it comes to water slides, dry slides, surfing simulators, rock walls, ice skating rinks, you know, pretty much every amenity that could go on a cruise ship pretty much is on Oasis class ships, which is what this is, the Wonder of the Seas. And this one is the largest. Again, this is one that was originally intended for the Chinese market, but of course, you know, they deployed it instead to, you know, the Caribbean and Europe and a couple of other places. And if I'm not mistaken, this was your first time on an Oasis class ship.
It absolutely was. I was concerned that it was going to be too big and there's just going to be just this mass of humanity. And I was really surprised at how well the ship adapted. I mean, I felt like any cruise, you get on and you're like, I just got to make it until 2 o'clock and then things will thin out. And it actually did. 2 o'clock being when the staterooms start to become available.
Actually, it's funny because I think that embarkation day is probably the worst we had it, right? In terms of the crowding and, you know, seeing everybody. Because, you know, people had their luggage or people were all on the boat. They were all getting lunch. And the staterooms weren't ready until, you know, closer to 2 o'clock. So during that kind of lunchtime period, you know, everybody's milling about, taking up all the available public spaces. And it was crowded, but that was the worst it got. And after that, I think you'd be hard pressed to have too many other times where you felt like the mass of humanity descending on you, right?
And that was the crazy part, right? Because you would think that you'd have that mass of humanity at the ports, and it didn't even feel like we had that. I mean, you had a little bit of a challenge getting an elevator, but that was the only problem that I observed the entire time we were on the ship from that mass of humanity other than before the staterooms opened.
Yep. Part of it is, this is one of the areas where I think Royal Caribbean does excel. You know, they have the most experience. This is their fifth Oasis class ship. So each time they've iterated, they've made it a little bit better. And they've really been masters of figuring out how to do that crowd control, you know, and by having all these amenities spread around the ship. And they basically have neighborhoods, right? So they have, you know, kind of the interior park area, which is very tranquil with lots of trees and live plants. And they've got kind of that rear boardwalk area, you know, with some, you know, kind of that boardwalk pier kind of feel with a carousel and a Johnny Rockets and an aqua theater and where that's where all the rock climbing walls are. And then you've got, you know, that whole pool area. I mean, you've got distinct sections of the boat for people to congregate and do different activities at different times. And I think they've been just kind of the masters of distributing the mass of humanity across all the decks, which it's a massive ship. And ours was completely full. I'm pretty sure it was a sold out itinerary. And, you know, that means that there were 6,000 people on there.
And the interesting thing I thought about that, and maybe I should have realized this before we actually got on board, but for the promenade and the boardwalk and the Central Park, all three of those are on different decks. So it wasn't like you could walk on the promenade and then walk further back aft to the stern of the ship to get to the boardwalk. You had to go up a couple of decks to do that. And then if you wanted to get to Central Park, you sort of had to do the same thing. And so like Central Park was great and tranquil in the midships, we'll say, but fore and aft, you had cabins. And so it sort of broke things up because it wasn't like you could just hang out on a single deck. I'd say, you know, in the lower decks, you couldn't hang out on a single deck and go, stern to bow. You could up top, obviously, on the pool areas, but I felt like that sort of changed how the dynamic was of the crowd control.
I'm sure that was intentional. You know, it was to make it so that there wasn't one deck where the entire, you know, there'd be like these bottlenecks, right? You know, you kind of split it up. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, you do see some of the bottlenecks on that pool deck and the deck above the pool. But I think at some point, you're just never going to be able to remove all bottlenecks.
Especially not on a pool deck on like a sea day when everyone's out there.
Yeah, yeah. But let's talk about another bottleneck. The restaurants and the bars, right? So So there was one location that we found that was absolutely wonderful if you could get the right time where there was the availability of seats. And that was Mason Jar.
Yeah, and that one's unique to Wonder of the Seas. It's the newest kind of dining venue that Royal Caribbean has developed. And it's kind of like, you know, it's supposed to be like a traditional, like Southern cuisine, American restaurant, but they also have a lovely bar with rocking chairs and live music at night. And I think if you came for the live country music at night, you'd probably have a hard time finding a seat. But we ended up going there kind of mid-afternoon, and it was a great place to have a cocktail, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And the floor-to-ceiling windows really helped when you're on, was that deck 14 or one of the higher decks? And you just had this bird's eye view, whether you were in port or sailing. It really felt, because of those floor-to-ceiling windows, it felt bigger than it really was.
Mm-hmm. They had really great bourbon and other kind of whiskey type cocktails. I think we tried quite a few of them. And I think the moonshine whiskey. I'm trying to remember now what it was called, but I definitely had my favorite. And, you know, what's interesting is they do serve them in little mason jar glasses, but, you know, toward the end of the voyage, we noticed they were running out of them. And then eventually they had none of them left. I dare say some people were taking those home with them as a little souvenir.
I kind of wish that I had figured that out earlier in the voyage. They were cool. They had the mason jar branding, which I thought was a nice touch. I mean, that's the sort of thing that I feel like Royal Caribbean kind of does well. They put in a little bit of that extra effort for the branding, even for the cocktails and stuff. And one area where they really went above and beyond, I thought, from a cocktail standpoint, was Wonderland.
Yeah, you know, Wonderland is another one of their specialty dining restaurants, and they kind of specialize in like deconstructed and molecular gastronomy, which means actually certain people of a certain age and generation are probably not going to like it.
How politically correct of you.
That being said, we saw a lot of families, a lot of kids, and, you know, it does have this Alice in Wonderland, hence the Wonderland name. You know, it does have that lovely theme, and, you know, people are in costumes, and the furniture and the entire restaurant are, of course, themed to the utmost. And so it's really a lovely place. I've dined there a couple times. Again, this is another one of these specialty dining venues where, you know, the upcharge is going to be high, and it's going to be, you know, that $50 kind of range if you don't have this part of some sort of a dining package. And I think we decided not to eat there, but we did actually go there more than once. But this time we went for cocktails, right?
Yeah. And the cocktails I thought were really, really good. A couple of martinis. I felt like they specialized in martinis. And they had a red pill and a blue pill. I'm trying to think of what they would have equated to.
And yeah,
I'm drawing a blank.
I'm drawing a blank at what they're equivalent to, but, you know, they had like, you know, they were sweetened by cotton candy. At least one of them was. So
yeah.
it was kind of a sweet cocktail. You know, again, just fun. It was a lively place. The theme was wonderful. It was a fun place to hang out for a little while, and another bar to frequent, you know, on this massive ship, you know, another option that you had.
And this one was kind of unique in that it was midships and looking backward on the boardwalk. So you even sort of had a view, even if you were just in the bar, it wasn't just of the restaurant. You had a little bit of this kind of two-story window of the boardwalk.
Yep. It's a very nice venue. Definitely would suggest people check it out when they're on either Wonderland, a couple of the other Oasis class ships that have it on there. You know, the other thing that I noticed on this Oasis class ship is the buffet is in a different location than pretty much on any of the other Oasis class ships. It's actually one deck below where the buffet usually is. And on this boat, they've, I think, utilized that space for more suites and maybe one of the suite restaurants. But by doing this, they've really expanded the size of the buffet and the layout. So it's so much better laid out. There's so much more seating. I feel like the crowd control and, you know, the bottlenecks are much better distributed. So once again, it's another example of Royal Caribbean, you know, kind of engineering the crowd control in really busy places like the main buffet, the Windjammer Cafe in this case.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. It felt just a little bit roomier. And mm-hmm. You just think of these buffets as just about as chaotic as an area on the ship gets. And this one was just a little bit less chaotic.
Considering it was a fully booked boat ride, yeah, I was surprised how calm and, you know, how easy it was for us to find seating, actually.
Absolutely. So do you want to jump to entertainment or do we want to talk casino next?
Let's talk a little bit about the entertainment because, you know, this is another way that I think some of these larger ships do distinguish themselves. So you got to actually experience a couple of venues that you didn't get to try on Voyager of the Seas, right? Your last Royal Caribbean cruise, only because some of these venues are only available on these Oasis class ships, right?
Yeah. So that big area on the boardwalk at the stern of the ship, the back of the ship, I should say, for those that don't have sea legs, you've got this big aqua show. And I thought that was pretty impressive. I mean, you've got, you know, high diving. They even had a tightrope walker that mm-hmm. kind of walked away.
They had slack rope, I think, is I think one another version of that they had, like not necessarily the high wire, you know, which was like above us, right? But then they had that, but they also had the slack wire, right, where they had kind of more at a lower level where the actual line dipped into the water at times.
Yeah, yeah. And then they added some more technology too. So they had some other kind of suspended components of the show, whether it was, you know, this big kind of camera that sort of circled around the area, right? So like over near the stage, over kind of the audience, getting the audience involved. And then they had one of the other kind of gymnasts that kind of was doing a variety of things on, what is it when they have the suspension thing?
Yeah, I don't know what you would call it, but you know, you could just think of it as just wire work, you know,
where work. There you go.
Yep.
But I thought that was really impressive, just the way they sort of had the stages that sort of went up and down, so to speak, in the pool that allowed, in some cases, significantly high diving. And in other cases, they were bringing it up and the performers were, you know, in just like ankle deep water. It was just a really interesting symphony of experience there.
Yeah, you know, I really do think they invest a lot of money in these aqua shows. I think it's a differentiator. I think the quality of it is probably very similar to what you might see in like a Las Vegas kind of show. Definitely the production value. You know, they're spending a lot of money on performers and technology and effects and things like that. And it shows. And it's very entertaining. It's unique. Even though you have five different, you know, Oasis class ships, you know, they all have a unique aqua show. So they don't repeat a lot of the same elements. And even if they do, that's going to be different music, different performers and different choreography, you know, on anything that is the same. And then, of course, you do have the high diving as well. You have these high divers diving off of, I don't know, like probably what, 100 feet up in the air into that pool, you know, or higher. I mean, there's some very high dive platforms. There's like two or three levels.
Yeah. At some points, I think I missed some of the high divers were up there until I saw them on their way in because that those two stanchions pillars are so high that they're not really in your field of view when you're focused on the stage. And I think that's how I would kind of attempt to quantify or paint the picture for how high some of these high dives are that they do on this particular show. But they also have, kind of going from the water side, you've also got the ice skating, which we've done two cruises, we've done two ice skating ice shows, and that is our daughter's favorite show. And she just gets so excited. You get down into that area, the ice skating rink, and you just have that feel about it because it's not that big. It almost feels a little bit more intimate than some of the other show venues.
I would agree. It's probably the most intimate of the big venues that we saw that. And you do get up, and I would recommend actually you go there early so you can kind of get pretty close to the ice because that experience being close up, I think is great. And even if you're in the back though, you're still a lot closer than you would be, let's say in the back half of the main theater.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the benefits. It also doesn't seem to get as loud as a parent of a toddler. Sometimes the volume is a concern. So I just say that for others with young ones, the volume doesn't always get as loud as like the aqua show or the effectors in the main stage, for example.
How was the effectors in the main stage?
They had this effectors 2. I didn't have the luxury of seeing effectors 1, but essentially we did see the creating of effectors 1 on the streaming TV in the room. And it's, as I understand it, it's the most technologically advanced or inclusive on stage show, whether it's, I think, on land or on sea. They use a bunch of drones. They use a lot of wire work. They even have some almost vehicles that get connected to the wires for being over the stage, over the audience. Overall, I thought it was an interesting narrative, an interesting story, but the area where they really exceeded the expectations were, you know, those special effects. There was one quote unquote hero that they had that was suspended over the audience and they would put lasers on her hands and they did it like the timing and the location, everything was absolutely perfect to make it look like she was, you know, shooting lasers or energy out of her hands. And to do that without like the special effects of that Marvel has that they do after the fact and all that other stuff. I thought that was perhaps the most impressive part for me, just the choreography and being just right at that right spot, the right time, the right hand motions. And you're doing that at sea.
Well, and you know, it was super high tech. And of course, there was a slight interruption in the middle of that show, if I remember, because they had to call the IT people or something.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. Yeah. They had a slight interruption in the Aqua show and the effectors. because I suspect because of the, you know, how inclusive they do technology into it. But I don't think that detracts that much from it. I mean, it gives you almost a little bit of an intermission, for lack of a better way of saying it.
There was also a nice parade that they did a couple of times down the promenade. I kind of enjoyed, although, you know, that this is one where I've probably seen it like four or five times now, because it's actually the same one they do on the other Oasis class ships. It's almost, I think, the same costumes and everything, same soundtrack. But it's just fun. It's fun to see, you know, people on segways and, you know, on floats and in colorful costumes, you know, kind of, you know, sauntering around the promenade deck, and with everybody sitting around and listening and cheering them on. And I enjoyed myself, even though I've probably seen it a handful of times.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie on this one. I was skeptical about it, but it turned out to be really, really awesome. Our daughter really loved it. We were really close to the entertainers. They're literally walking by at like, you know, 6 feet or so. They engaged, you know, they were engaging with the kids. The majority of them had smiles, and they had all these different, you had colonial kind of dress, you had Asian mariners dress, you had pirates, you had all these different themes.
The cast was huge. There was like, what, 30 or 40 people at least that were part of this parade.
It had to have been. And really just the, you know, the fact that you go to these shows and you're not really engaging with them, right? Because you're just watching them do their art, and they're very good at what they do. Don't get me wrong. But the cool part is when you see all these entertainers and, you know, one or two actually just are so happy to be there that they engage with the kids as they're going by, and just the smile on their faces.
You know what the secret there is? You know, I think some of that cast is from Adventure Ocean, and you know, it's from the kids club. I think some of the people in that parade are coming down from the kids area to be extras for this parade. That's probably why they were so good at that.
You know, I believe that. And some people just like kids and they can kind of do that thing. But yeah, I thought that was, I didn't expect to enjoy that as much as I did. And I think that's definitely something that we'll include in the future, even if it is the same show, although you kind of ruined it for us.
Let's switch topics. Let's talk a little bit about something that's pretty much nothing to do with the parade or kids. You know, let's talk about the casino, which is, again, something very unique on this ship. So to start, they had something called the Golden Room. What's the Golden Room?
Yeah, so the Golden Room was perhaps my favorite place to be because it was the smoke-free version of the casino. It's a little bit of a distance away from the main casino, and they don't have as many options, and they didn't have, I think they only had like two or four tables, and the minimums were a little bit higher than I like to play, but they had a couple of really good machines, and again, they had the no smoking, which I felt like, even if the drink service is a little bit slower and don't have all the,
it's worth the compromise, isn't it?
It's totally worth the compromise.
It totally is. And this is what used to be the jazz club in a lot of the other Oasis class ships. They've unfortunately, I guess, gotten rid of it, but you know, you still can get jazz in Central Park every night. That's, I think, what they did instead, is that you really had the jazz band play up there instead of in the jazz club, which was definitely an underutilized venue, I think, on the other ships.
Yeah, and I'll say this was not an underutilized venue on the Wonder. That area, it was hard to get a seat, but when you got a seat, you didn't really want to give it up.
Yeah, we went, you know, we had a couple of good spins on some of those machines in there.
Yeah, actually, when you think about it, that's where I think we had our best spins too.
I would agree. I think we had the most luck in that room. That room also had something that's also a unique thing that I've not seen on any other Oasis class ship, and that was a small buffet.
You're right. They did have the casino appetizers. I did notice appetizers in the main casino as well.
Yes, they were in both areas.
They were. And that was a nice little thing. I mean, you know, obviously food's largely free on the ship, but to not have to leave the casino if you get the munchies at midnight, that's a nice feature.
It's nice. I hope they have it in other places. I think it was a nice addition. And I think Royal Caribbean, I will say one of the criticisms, at least for me, is their late night options are pretty limited if you don't like pizza. So, you know, at least this is one other thing you have out there.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that the pizza was pretty good. I may have had that every night except for the last at 2 a.m.
How are the rooms on this cruise? Can I let people know that you actually cruised in an interior cabin?
Well, I suppose we already have. I was actually surprised. So I was dreading it the entire time. I have cruised on an interior cabin in the past, right? So our first cruise for my wife and I as a couple was just like one of those 3-4 nights on a Carnival, the Carnival Fantasy, which I don't even think is sailing anymore. And we were in an interior cabin, and that one, we did not love it. This one, we were actually surprised at how well it worked out. It was a little bit of a different design. Normally, you look at these staterooms, cabins, and the bed is facing either fore or aft, right? The bow or the stern. This one, the bed was, I think we were facing port side with our head, you know, starboard side, essentially, as an interior cabin. And you still feel it. It's a different feel when you're in somewhat rough seas, because we were in, 6 meter seas at some points. But I still slept like a baby. It didn't really matter as much that we had no window. We did leave our TV on occasionally because they put the camera on so you can at least see what's going on outside. But it was not as bad as I was concerned about.
Yep. So should we talk a little bit about how we booked this cruise? Because, you know, this was interesting where this was actually the Kim family, my family, and obviously Trevor's family. It was a group cruise, right? It was six of us total.
It was indeed. Yeah, we definitely had a nice group, and you and your folks were kind enough to let us tag along with your Casino Royale Prime award.
Yeah, so the Kim family, we're a bunch of gamblers. So my dad, my mom, myself, we are all Prime members. And so one of the benefits is an annual cruise benefit. And this is kind of like a wild card offer. You know, it's, you can pretty much book almost any 7-night cruise that Royal Caribbean does. And so, of course, we picked one on the newest ship when it was available. By the way, usually within the first year of cruising, you know, there's kind of a blackout period for using this kind of offer. But we managed to, I think, get it as soon as it was kind of coming out of quote-unquote embargo for casino cruises. And we lucked out. We got three interior cabins. They're all next to each other. I wouldn't say they were the best cabins on the ship, but they were decent. And they were not too far from the elevators. And for our purposes, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I was much more impressed than I expected to be, and I found that to be just absolutely perfect. And as we always say, free isn't free.
Yep. It was still, about $200 to $250 in taxes and tips per person. And the way we booked it, by the way, is, you know, there were three annual cruises, and so we had basically two people in each cabin. So I would book, I guess, your daughter, and, you know, I think my mom booked your wife, and my dad's cabin booked you. And then we just got on board to the customer service, and we kind of just did a massive switcheroo to get the right people in the right cabins, and away we went.
Yeah. And every time we do that, I'm a little bit nervous, but it works out fine. I mean, you lose an hour waiting in line to get everything kind of synced up. But after that, there's no problem at all.
Yeah.
And it's really quite
nice. Worked like clockwork. So do you want to talk a little bit about CocoCay? Because, you know, interestingly enough, you know, I've been to CocoCay a whole bunch of times, which is the Royal Caribbean private island, but this was your first time there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I think our experience was definitely improved by the fact that you had been there. I think if we had arrived on our own, we would have probably had a little bit different of a time. But you knew the area to go to, you knew where the shuttle was, and you sort of choreographed that perfect day.
Yes.
And you made that the perfect day. This was not a Royal Caribbean thing. Yes, they gave you the mat to paint your perfect day, and you helped for all of us to have that perfect day by going to, was it Thunder Bay?
Well, it's Chill Island.
Chill Island, that's it.
And I like Chill Island because, you know, that's where I think the majority of the more mature palm trees are. And so I think the amount of shade and the shade umbrellas and such, and it's pretty close to the, you know, the restaurant that's there and the largest freshwater pool in the Caribbean. You know, you can also walk there too.
Which was awesome to walk over to, but I don't think I'd want to have gotten a chaise lounge there and stayed there the whole time. I mean, those are the small little things that kind of made the difference, I thought. You find a nice chill area, right? About 100 feet from the water. And this is like a Gulf style beach. It had a cove, and, you know, you walk to the pool, you walk to the food, and everything kind of goes well. But yeah, I think that was choreographed because of your experience there, and we had a wonderful time.
I'll take some credit, but yeah, I think one of the things you do get is you get a bit of analysis paralysis because you go in just like you've got, you know, go to the grocery store and you've got, you know, five different brands of toilet paper and you don't know which one to pick. It's the same deal when you go to, you know, because they have so many different beaches and areas for you to go to, which is great because they do, once again, a great job with all the crowds. But then sometimes you're like, oh, indecision and analysis paralysis because, you know, when you're presented with all these options, where do we go? What's the best one? Well, it's nice to have somebody who's been there and can kind of just guide you and say, okay, just come with me, come here. And that's what we did. And I think that's why it really was a perfect day.
I couldn't agree more. Tom, how about we close out with a couple of tips here?
That sounds like a great idea. So I've got a couple ones, and we kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier because, you know, let's start with the first fact that, once again, specialty dining is extraordinarily expensive these days. I think our tip is do specialty dining for lunch. I've done this now several times with Royal Caribbean, and I've never had a bad meal, I think, with the specialty dinings that are available. Some were better than others, but, you know, in general, I've always enjoyed what I was served, and the value for money for lunch is so much better. So I think on this trip, we did Chops Grill, all of us together, right, which is their steakhouse. And it only ended up costing about $20+ before tip and taxes and things. So not crazy, considering that dinner is nearly three times that price. And honestly, I think what we were served is about 90% of what you would have gotten for dinner. We just had an extraordinarily amazing lunch.
Yeah, I don't know how you triple the cost. I don't know how you triple the experience that we had for lunch there. I definitely agree there.
I think that's where some of the gold is. You know, go and definitely on a Royal Caribbean ship, get Chops lunch for, you know, book that. And book it before you get on, because I believe if we had booked it on board, it would have been a little bit more expensive. So that price, I think I mentioned, was pre-booking it for the six of us.
You think about the main dining room for dinner, cultivate that relationship with your waiter and the assistant, and maybe you get a little bit better of an experience. You know, if you like a particular beverage, they might have that particular beverage ready for you. If you prefer a type of roll and not another type of roll, they often will try to have those different pieces kind of prepared for you if they're able to.
Yeah, I would say, once again, you know, the fact that specialty dinner is so expensive, and the fact that the main dining room is so good, you know, I mean, we had main dining room pretty much every night for dinner. I think we left happy customers.
I would agree. Last tip, book an appointment with Next Cruise for the last evening if you think you're going to gamble. If you're going to be in the casino, book that appointment. Get the lists so you can go to the host and they can tell you the different lists that they've got, different thresholds. If you earn 1,200 points or 1,500 points or 2,000 points, get those lists, plan out what you think you want to do, and make sure you get that appointment with Next Cruise. Book it for the last of evening, but book it on day one or two.
Yep, that's a really good tip that I don't hear a lot of people saying, especially the ones, you know, if you have any kind of possibility of having a complimentary offer from the casino. You know, they usually give you those certificates either the night before, that they leave it in your stateroom, or, you know, if you do it kind of go up to the end, you could ask the host to print it out. But it's good to be able to have that appointment, because everybody else that earned a free cruise is going to be, you know, going for those appointments, and they run out fast.
So true. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
Join the conversation, become a Milenomics Patreon member, and get access to even more in-depth miles and points travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.